This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota. Mary Meyer is back with us. Mary, good morning. Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Denny, and happy first day of winter.
Yes, I believe if that information I got is correct, it came in at 3:21 this morning, as a matter of fact.
Yes, and now nothing to look forward to but longer days ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm thinking, hearing the Al, let me just double check. Usually this time of day, we always get a little drop in temperature, usually do. It's back to three above. There's no wind chill because the air is calm, but it's a nice morning. Folks are commenting on the sunrise this morning.
Yes,
but
it is
chilly. And I got to ask you, what do gardeners do this time of year when it's so chilly, and do a lot of reading, I presume. But what do you do during this time?
Well, yes, you can do a lot of reading. I do a lot of looking out my window, looking at what's out there. So planning, reading, thinking about things to do. There are also, because of our seasons, there are a number of gifts that you can get. Yesterday, I was given an amaryllis that is waxed. I don't know if our listeners have seen this, but, you know, the amaryllis is a big, beautiful flower, and the bulbs are quite large. It's a tropical, and, of course, you often get it planted in a pot, but it is also sold with wax on it, usually red wax, and so you just have this bulb with wax around it, no soil, nothing to do. You don't water this or anything, but because the bulb has the flower stored within it, and it is so sensitive to temperature, it will bloom, and you'll get this big, beautiful flower with doing nothing. Now, this is not this is a difficult amaryllis to keep alive afterwards, and, you know, probably many of our listeners have kept their amaryllis and they put it in the basement or they put it outside in the summer, and so you have it, it can bloom other years. But when it's in a wax like this and not in soil, it doesn't have a chance to really grow other than shoot up the flower. But anyway, so it's an interesting gift to give. So gift giving and what's blooming indoors, a lot of interest in indoor plants now and house plants. And it's, even though it's cold, a lot of garden centers, garden box stores will have house plants, and people, you know, gardeners focus on indoor house plants now, reading and planning for next summer.
Yes, already. If you have any kind, I mean any kind of a lawn or garden question for Mary, by all means, call us or text us. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get. So let's hear from you sooner rather than later. We'd love to talk with you, or just read your text, 651-461-9226. That's good for either a phone call or a text question for Mary, 651-461-9226. I was thinking, too, as far as great reading, a great resource, and we talk about this every year at this time, usually 52 weeks a year, but especially now, is get to the university's website. Such great information there.
Right. There's a lot of great information there. And of course, you can get on the email list to regularly receive updates when the newsletters are written. So we have newsletters about lawn care, which is such a big topic, and year-round, people are wondering about their lawns or thinking about their lawns. And so you can get regular tips via email on lawn care, or you can get the Yard and Garden newsletter. And then if any of our listeners have more of an interest in fruits or vegetables or even some small growers or large growers, we have newsletters for fruit and vegetable growers as well. So lots of timely information that you can get on a regular basis by looking at the extension.umn.edu website.
And I presume that we will be getting questions about dormant seeding. As a matter of fact, after not running out of luck, my timing was poor. I finally got both front and backyard dormant seeded just before the snow fell.
Oh, good for you, Danny.
Yeah,
yes, because now it's very difficult to do it now because, well, it's basically throwing it in the wind because it's a long way from getting direct contact with the soil because, of course, the snow that's there now.
That's right.
But dormant seeding has worked out well for many people. It's a newer kind of philosophy or thinking about it, and it can be very effective. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, I'm looking at the forecast, and we may be getting more melting. In fact, the weather folks are talking about a warm 2-3 next few weeks above average temperatures.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, so we could be seeing our lawns once again. So there still may be other opportunities, although we need that snow. We need the snow.
We need the snow is poor man's mulch. So
yeah.
It's a wonderful mulch for gardeners. And I know I went outside to do a little bit of cross-country skiing. I heard kids yelling and screaming with delight with the snow. And gardeners were delightful also.
Absolutely. Let's grab a phone call this morning. Another Mary is calling in, this one from Crystal. Good morning, Mary. What is your question for Mary Meyer this morning?
Well, I wanted to add two comments about the amaryllis. One, I got one for my birthday, and it had four blossoms, and then up comes another stem. There may be four blossoms, but there's so many, I can't even count them. They're so squished. But what I wanted to add was there is a website, and that shows how to remove the wax, and then you can save your bulb and just treat it like you always treated our amaryllis buds. And I'm thinking that they're going to, you know, come back again. Gives you really good details.
Oh, great to know, Mary. I will look that up. Right, because you do want to be careful cutting, removing that wax. You don't want to cut in and damage the bulb itself. But at that point, then you would plant the bulb, and then the roots need to grow, and it needs to, yes, rejuvenate. You know, it's really amazing how long a bulb can last or stay alive when it's not in soil and not getting water, because all of that is the stored food that's in the bulb. And at some point, the reserves and all the stored food has been used to make the leaves and everything. But the leaves, of course, are then going to photosynthesize, but without roots growing. That's interesting. So I'm definitely going to try that, Mary. I will try keeping the bulb that I was given and see how it goes. Yeah, good idea.
We're going to get back to more texts and phone calls, Mary, in just a moment. But as we head to this break, I want to just mention that our thoughts go out to Julie Weisenhorn this morning, who lost her father this past week. So our thoughts.
Oh, yes, for sure, Denny. Thank you. Yeah.
We'll talk to Julie one of these days here on our Saturday morning show. So our sympathies go out. All of us here at CCO.
Yes.
It's 8:17 in the morning. Mary, let's take this quick break. Be right back. Let's invite more listeners to join in on our Smart Garden Show. Call us or text us. Sandy and Waconia, you're going to be next. So don't go away. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. And on this first day, officially, of winter, welcome back to CCO's Smart Garden Show, around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Mary Meyer from the U of M answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have at 651-461-9226. Mary, we promised Sandy from Waconia that she would be next. Sandy, good morning. What can we do for you this morning?
Good morning. I have a question about clematis. I know it's not the time to be talking about it too much, but I have this burning question of, I have a huge clematis. It's about 4 years old. Every year it grows just beautiful and flowers so pretty. Last year it grew beautiful and I had not one bud. And it looks healthy. The only thing that was different was a robin decided to build a nest in there. And I don't know if that will stop it from budding out and flowering. I don't know. What do you think I should do this year?
You know, I think the robin did not have anything to do with the flowering. They're more interested in habitat and a good place to hide and cover. But no, I don't think that one robin or one nest could have affected the flowering. So I don't think that really has anything else to do with it. I'm wondering if something else changed around it, if it's become more shade or it didn't have the same exposure that it did previous years. Or maybe the drought affected it. The drought conditions were one thing that really did affect a lot of our plants. And it's easy to forget when it rained a lot and then it didn't rain. So it's hard to remember that. If it's in full sun, and you don't think shade has really affected it, then I would consider fertilizing it or maybe doing a soil test to determine the nutrient levels. But I would use some fertilizer, some all-purpose fertilizer like 5-10-10 regular garden fertilizer or liquid fertilizer that you put on and water that in a few times just as it starts to grow in the spring. It's rare, but sometimes fertilizer is lacking for plants that we want to flower a lot. But if it's a large clematis and it's been growing, that's usually once they get large enough, the flowers are pretty much common. The other thing I would do is I would not do any pruning on it unless you see the actual canes that are totally dead and don't have any green buds or leaves on them. So there are three different kinds of clematis, and not knowing which kind you have, just not pruning it until you just make sure anything you're pruning is totally dead. So wait till it starts to grow in the spring if you think about pruning it.
All right. Texter says this, Mary, my Christmas cactus looks very healthy, but has not bloomed in 2 years, gets indirect sun in the bedroom. Your thoughts?
Well, two things will induce the Christmas or Thanksgiving cactus to bloom. One is cold temperatures, cool temperatures, like something below 60 for a few weeks. So if you keep it in a cooler room consistently, cold can induce it to bloom. The other thing is the short days. And, of course, we have short days now, but then we mess things up by turning on the lights in our house. So you need to put it in a room that just has the natural day length for about a month, and that will induce the blooming. So cool days or short temperatures, and if it hasn't bloomed yet this fall, there's still time for you to do that. It might be blooming more towards our next holiday instead of a December holiday.
You and I were talking, Mary, at the top of the show about what gardeners are doing or thinking of doing or just dreaming, and that's exactly what this texter says. I'm dreaming of summer. My first catalog arrived.
Oh, boy, I haven't gotten one yet. But, yes, that's right, certainly to look through the catalogs and see what's new. There's always a lot of new vegetables, new flowers, and so much fun, yes.
This listener, Mary, said, I brought my Kong Rose in for the winter. Will it stay alive being an annual?
What is it? What kind of rose?
It says Kong. I'm not sure if that's
K-O-N-G.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a misprint or what.
There's a King Kong or coleus that I know of, but Kong rose, if it's an annual, well, you never know. If it's blooming and it looks good, I would say keep it in full sun conditions because annuals need sun and probably a lot of water, so regular water.
Hello, this texter says, we have florican-bearing raspberries, and the rabbits love the canes during the fall and winter months. We have fence posts and wire to serve as a trellis for the canes. Would it work to put up some plastic netting with approximately half-inch openings in the netting's grid, which is about 3 feet tall, to keep the rabbits out of the canes, or would they eat through the netting? I'm considering putting the netting up, supporting it with the fence posts at the ends of the rows. Thank you for your thoughts.
Well, you could try it, and depending on how much netting you have, you might be able to double it up. I have not had rabbits, chipmunks, and so on chew through netting unless they get caught on the inside. And once they get caught in the inside, they'll tangle themselves up and end up dying in the netting. So that's kind of ugly as well. But I think it's definitely worth a try. Chicken wire or the wire fencing, like, is hardware cloth. That's really something they're not going to chew through. But if all you have is the plastic netting, I would try to double it up as much as possible. And you're right, those are wonderful canes that lots of animals like to eat in the winter. That's one of the common things we see eaten in the spring when we go out is the raspberry canes.
Yeah. I know we have to break for weather here in a moment, but I want to get another text to you. My iris bed becomes overrun with quack grass, especially after the iris shoots get taller, so I hesitate to go in to pull. My question, is it okay to put mulch to try to choke out the quack grass?
No. Well, you could do that. Mulch on top of the iris, traditional iris, is not a good thing. The thing about the bearded iris is they are a high-maintenance plant, and they usually do better if you dig and divide them. So, you know, if this was my bed, I would get the iris out of there when they need to be divided, which is like every 3-4 years. I'd take the iris out, and then I would use a chemical or some type of tillage or management to get rid of that quack grass, and then plant your iris back in it after the bed is clean of the quack grass. That's a hard situation. You know, you can try weeding by hand as much as possible, but that's a really big job. And breaking the rhizomes with quack grass, you know, unless you get every little piece, those darn rhizomes, they will just grow back again. This is one of our most difficult weeds to really control. So I would consider really removing the iris and then dealing with the quack grass, if that's possible.
All right. One more text before we look at that forecast. This listener says, I'm overwintering a spike. Can I cut the top part off?
Yeah, the spike or dracaena, this is a common plant that we see in the middle of a lot of container plantings. It's a long foliage plant. But cutting off the top of this, I'm not sure what that means. So the growing point is down near the center with the leaves. And this really is an annual if it's inside. But, you know, it sounds like this person doesn't like the looks of it. And so I would say, well, give it a try, you know, give it a try, see what happens. If you've got this plant indoors in the winter and it grows through that, fine, but you might have to replace it again in the spring, because that it can be grown as a house plant, but we really grow that mostly outdoors as an annual.
All right, very good. Mary, hang on, please. We'll take a break for weather. Have about another half hour of our Smart Garden Show to go. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, by all means, call us or text us, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO, stay with us. And welcome back this Saturday morning to our Smart Garden Show and answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you might have this morning. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Mary, I always like to bring up, especially this time of year when we have so many family, friends visiting from out of town, is get to the Arboretum. So many good things to see there.
Yes, the beautiful winter lights display is now going on. You do need tickets to go to it. Some of the earliest times in the evenings are sold out, but tickets were open every day that I looked. Some certain times you can go. You know, the thing I like about it is, of course, it's the Arboretum. So they have lights that depict plants. And my favorite is the big apple, the red apple that you can walk into that's an apple of lights. There's also a weeping willow tree. There's some roses. There's some water lilies. So it's a wonderful light exhibit to see. And there are special events that go along with it with s'mores and music. And so lots of information on the Arboretum's website. And it's a wonderful place, yes, now though, with some mild temperatures to take out-of-town visitors and walk along the trails and see the beautiful lights. There's also a magnificent poinsettia tree indoors and some art exhibits indoors. So if you don't feel like walking outdoors, you can enjoy the art and the plants and the wonderful gift shop, the new restaurant, Rootstock, as well at the Arboretum.
Yeah, I was going to say you can also take your family or friends and for a little dining besides seeing all those beautiful things.
Yes, great the Rootstock restaurant has a lot of local foods, and it's a delightful place to eat. So, yes, highly recommend it.
Very good. Just head out west on Highway 5 to about 41, and you're almost there. Easy drive. Looking at a text, Mary, I love the show, thank you. It says, I have an amaryllis, and the bulb is very large, not encased in wax. Came with a dirt pod. There are three tall leaves, but no sign of a flower. What do you think is the problem?
Well, you should just wait, because once you pot up the amaryllis, and unless it's in wax, all of the bulbs should be potted as soon as possible and watered. They like to have part of the bulb kind of up out of the soil, but it takes 4 to 6 weeks for the bulbs to actually bloom. So it does take some time, and often the leaves will come first, and then the buds, the flowers, will come later. And as the I think it was Mary, the first caller today, said that, you know, she had one stalk that came up and bloomed, and then another stalk did come up. So the larger the bulb, the more likely you will have more than one flowering stalk. So if you're ever purchasing amaryllis, they're sold by the size of the bulb. The bigger the bulb, the more flowers will be there. But most always, the first year, this is almost 100% guarantee that this bulb is going to flower if it's a new bulb.
And this kind of goes right into a lot of amaryllis questions this morning. This texter bought an amaryllis planted in a 6-inch pot a month ago to give as a gift for Christmas. Texter says, I was hoping that it would have started popping up by now, but nothing seems to be happening. I've kept it in a window, kept the soil moist, wondering if it will soon grow, but worried that it's a dud and I don't want to give it as a gift if it's not going to grow. Same answer?
Yeah, I have never had one fail. And I've had, sometimes there seems to be a delay in getting them going. So they have to absorb quite a bit of water. If they're in that dormant state and then you put them in a pot, they need to absorb water and really wake up, so to speak, before they start growing. And the ones that are encased in wax, they have that moisture in there, and then it's a function of being in light and warmth that will start them to grow. But yes, I know. I've given some as gifts, and they have been late, but they've always flowered. Yep.
Oh, good news. Yep. If you have any kind of a lawn and garden question, let's hear it before we run out of time this morning. 651-461-9226. Mary Myers answering those questions this morning. Here's another one. How should one fertilize a Christmas cactus?
Well, Christmas cactus and all of our houseplants that we look forward to the flowers on them do need some extra fertilizer. So I use liquid fertilizer even through the winter on flowering plants. And if you're a little cautious about it, you can use half the strength that's recommended on the label of the fertilizer. Make sure that the soil is moist before you fertilize. I often water a day before or an hour or two before I'm going to put fertilizer on to make sure that the soil is moist, and then use fertilizer. In the winter, you don't need it as much, but every couple of weeks for a flowering plant and for Christmas cactus, yes, I would consistently do that through the winter.
Okay. Mary, this listener said, we kept last year's poinsettia alive. How do we get the leaves to turn red?
Well, this is just like the Christmas cactus. Well, somewhat similar. It's the short days. So as the day length gets shorter naturally in the fall and in the winter, that short day induces red bracts or red leaves to come on the poinsettia. So you just have to be careful about putting it in a room that you don't use. The natural day length right now will induce it to bloom. It needs about 4 weeks of short days, not interrupted by anyone forgetting there's a poinsettia in the room. So don't go in there at night and turn on the light. One or two nights can really mess it up. So it needs a month with just natural short days to induce the leaves to turn red. And of course, then you might have it for Valentine's Day now at this point.
Aha, very good.
Right.
Mary, let's grab a phone call. I think Bob is checking in from Edina this morning. Excuse me. Bob, thanks for calling. What is your question?
Hi. My question is, I've got a couple of grow tents in my basement now, and I'm growing marijuana. And it's just, it's actually a lot of fun. You get it, everything's available. And my question is how is the University of Minnesota going to be involved as this rolls out as a, you know, a major farm crop in the state?
Well, I have to say here that the University of Minnesota is paying attention to the regulations of the state and the federal government. So because of the regulations and the money involved with the university in research projects, that's a number one priority, is how the state regulates marijuana, what is legal to do, and also the federal government. So the last I looked into this, there was one researcher in the Department of Biological Sciences who was working on marijuana growth at the University of Minnesota, George Wieblin. There's also now a scientist who writes for the Star Tribune, who's a graduate from the University of Minnesota, Clem. What is Clem's last name? But you can read articles in the Star Tribune from a scientist who was educated at the University of Minnesota. So it is difficult to have as much research as I think we would like, because there are still quite a few regulations on the state and the federal level. So that's not a very good answer, Bob, but it's not as straightforward because it's been a regulated plant.
Yeah. We'll be hearing more, I'm sure, and getting more questions.
It keeps changing. Yes, it keeps changing. And yeah, right.
Another text. Thank you for the call, Bob. Thanks for the info. A listener says about digging up and dividing irises. I guess that will be another job to add to my list. But should that be done in spring or fall?
Iris are unusual in that it's kind of late midsummer. It's late July or early August is when the bearded iris go into a dormant state, and that is the best time to dig and divide them. So it's after they've flowered, and you'll see they kind of start to decline at that point, and that's when they're kind of dormant. You can dig them up and replant them, and they grow then in the fall, will grow some roots and reestablish.
Very good. Mary, we're going to take a quick break, and with a reminder that coming along next hour, Andy Lindis will have our home improvement show, so keep those questions in mind for Andy next hour. In the meantime, what kind of a day today weather-wise? Well, we're going to get up to about 18 on this first official day of winter. We dropped to 13 overnight. It'll be up to 30 tomorrow. And just looking ahead for Christmas Day, another cloudy, pretty much a cloudy week, but highs near 34 predicted right now for Christmas Day. At this moment, we have a cloudy sky, air is calm, CCO temp 3 degrees above zero. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have here in our remaining minutes. And we do still have a bunch. Mary, let's see how many folks we can help. This listener has two orchids. Should the stems be trimmed back when they finish blooming?
If it's the flowering stem, I would really caution you to wait. Sometimes the buds appear along that same flowering stem, and that becomes another flower. So I would wait on the flowering stem until they totally turn brown and are pretty shriveled up as far as doing any pruning on them.
Okay. Here's a question we get quite often, not only on this show, but our home improvement show as well. Woodpeckers in the east and south side of my house near the roofline, can you tell me how to get rid of these woodpeckers? Well, I'm not sure if they're just doing drumming, you know, attracting mates or what the deal is.
Right. Yes, they do. They're territorial, and so they can drum just to say, you know, this is my space, you know, leave the area. That's usually it. You know, they look for insects, and we see them certainly on the ash trees, getting the ash borers that are out there as well. So we used to have that problem, but now we have siding on our house. So, I mean, that's an extreme thing, but you get rid of the wood. You have to do that. Sometimes you can put mylar streamers or things that will motion things that will make them leave, but it's very difficult if it's a wood surface.
Mary, we had this same question a week or two ago on the Home Improvement Show, and Andy Lindis, our friend Andy, bought, and he said it really works. It's a motion-sensing owl that drops down, it has a sound effect.
Oh my gosh!
It doesn't have a sound effect of an owl, he said, but actually of a hawk. I'm guessing.
Well, yeah. Okay. So it's motion as well as sound. Oh my goodness!
And he said it does work.
Oh, yeah. I think that would scare off the woodpeckers. Interesting.
I'm not sure where he got it, but there's just another tip if you can Google that and find that. Another listener says this. I had to put netting over my blueberries last year to keep the birds, et cetera, out, but caught several garter snakes that tangled and died, unfortunately. Will eggshells around the netting keep the snakes away? I don't mind them in my garden.
I don't know if eggshells will do it. You'd have to have a really lot of them, coarse substance. You might try diatomaceous earth. That's a seashells ground up that's very coarse that we know slugs do not like. But coarse sand or something coarse, or you could try eggshells. That might work. Yeah. But okay. Something coarse might, yeah.
In some cases, the texts kind of jump around and the people send multi-levels of texts. It's kind of like a puzzle. So bear with me here if I can piece this together. Good morning. Enjoy the show. Thank you. I have a mystery for you this morning. I have two apple trees and two pear trees. I pruned them last winter and even pruned a lot of buds and had beautiful fruit on all four trees. I went away for a week in August. When I came back, a piece of fruit was gone. I had over 60. I'm sure on one tree. They were up too high for deer. There was not one spot of fruit on the ground left over. One tree I had not treated, and the fruit was very bad. That was gone as well. Any ideas what happened? What kind of a... Can you solve the mystery?
Well, I for the first year had squirrels eat my Zestar apples, and I have no idea why they decided this year they were going for them. But the tree had gotten into every other year bearing, so this was the bearing year. There was a huge crop on the tree, and at first I thought, oh, well, they'll get some of them, and I'll get some of them. But those squirrels were unbelievable. They carted off. They left half of them sometimes eaten so I could see them, but I could see them in the trees having the wonderful time of it. And I have never had so much damage from squirrels as I did on this one apple tree. So I'm wondering if that was it, if it was squirrels or chipmunks that just... You know, once there's an overpopulation of wildlife, they have to find food somewhere, and so they look for new or different sources. So that's about the only thing I can think of, that it was some other wildlife that ate it.
Maybe a raccoon, possibly?
Yeah, I think that's possible. Raccoons do like fruit as well, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, you get one of those trail cameras out there, and maybe you can figure that out.
Yeah.
Here's a listener question. We get this from time to time, too, Mary. As you know, I did not get a chance to dormant seed this year. I'm going to wait till next year, basically, they're saying. How long will grass seed stay good?
Well, every year it does deteriorate with the germination, and you can try your own tests, so count the seed, put it out, and see how much germinates. But you might have an opportunity with the winter that we have ahead of us where the ground will become bare again. And so you can put seed down if it's on bare soil. So as long as there's very little or no snow there, you might be able to reseed it again this winter. But with every year you keep seed, the germination goes down. It might go down by only 10 or 20%. So the older it is, the lower germination you'll get.
All right. Another text says this. I think we can... take time for this. I'm watering most of my plants from the bottom to reduce fungus gnats. Can I add fertilizer to the water for bottom watering?
Well, yes, you could do that. And if you've established that means of fertilization or means of watering, then yes, the plants will take up the fertilizer. So you could do that, yeah.
And we did get an earlier one about, I missed that, and I'm glad we have this reminding me, about fungus gnats. What are they and how do you get rid of them was an earlier text.
Yes, those are quite common now in homes because if you have any house plants that you've brought in, fungus gnats are very common. And they're a very small kind of fruit fly size insect. They live in the soil. They come out of the soil. But one of the main reasons they can live is moist soil conditions. So if you really let the soil dry out, especially the top inch or so dry out in between waterings, that will do a lot to eliminate the number of fungus gnats that you have. And then there are other ways to trap them, insecticidal soap and things like that. So the extension.umn.edu website has a whole page on fungus gnat control that you can look at. But the easiest thing is just to really make sure that you do let the soil dry out in between watering.
And yes, absolutely. Get to the university website, extension.umn.edu, and get to the Arboretum, right?
Yes, that's right, Denny. Just a couple things. We had that Kong rose question.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that is a coleus. That is a coleus, which is the big decorative foliage plant, and you can try growing that indoors. I would. That's a beautiful plant.
Hmm.
And then someone asked about the spike, cutting off a spike,
yeah,
which is a Dracaena. Yeah. Well, if you cut the whole stem, yes, I've done that. You can cut the whole stem and root that in water, and it's a way to propagate that plant. So that's another house plant, or sometimes grown outdoors as
All
well.
Right. Great, great yeah. follow up, Mary. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Oh, thank. Thank you, Denny. Same to you.
And we'll talk soon.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you.
Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.